99 FM over the air here in San Juan County. In Durango, Colorado, we broadcast at 103.3 FM. And if you're anywhere else on the planet and want to tune us in, all you have to do is go to our website, which is ksje.com. Coming up today in the next few moments, my conversation with Sexual Assault Services of Northwest New Mexico. We'll be talking about their upcoming Sassy Tortoise and Hare Run, a big fundraiser for them as they celebrate a special anniversary this year. We'll talk more about that with my guest in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then later on this hour, of course, we'll be talking with Lewis Campbell from Synergy Computer Systems. Lewis and I talk technology every Monday at 8:50 right here on KSJE. That is coming up. And then next hour, we'll turn things over to Mick Hess, our host of Roving with the Arts, our weekday classical music program beginning at 9:06 on KSJE. Don't forget, you can also connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram, in addition to Facebook and YouTube. And if you're a podcast person, you can subscribe for free to KSJE Podcasts wherever you're probably already listening to podcasts and discover a new local program that you may have missed. Outside our studios here at San Juan College, it's a mostly cloudy Monday morning. We're expecting mostly cloudy skies throughout the day today. Those winds are going to kick up again as well. They're already a little breezy at 16 miles per hour. It's 32 degrees right now. We're expecting 44 for a high today with wind gusts maybe up to 45 miles per hour this afternoon. Winds continuing overnight with a low of 31 degrees, and then tomorrow a 50% chance of rain or snow showers on Tuesday with a high again only 44 degrees. 29 degrees for a low Tuesday night, then sunny on Wednesday with a bit warmer, 47, warming back up to near 60 degrees by Thursday, lower 60s by Friday and Saturday before maybe the next storm system moves in. I'll be back with my guest with more right after this on KSJE. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center. The caregivers of San Juan Regional Medical Center are committed to bettering the quality of life, health, and care of individuals, families, and our communities. Life is their sacred trust. Better is their mission. Here is their home. San Juan Regional Medical Center, improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. KSJE is proud to support the Farmington Jazz Festival, Saturday, April 12th in downtown Farmington, featuring Julia Keefe Trio, Delbert Anderson Quartet, Indigene Femme, and more at 3 p.m. in Orchard Park. The headliners will also appear at a workshop from noon to 2 p.m. at Inspired Moments Event Center. The event will also honor Native musician and band leader Jacob C. Morgan with a special ceremony at 2:45 p.m. The Farmington Jazz Festival, free Saturday, April 12th. And back here in Studio A this morning with my guest, as I mentioned, from Sexual Assault Services of Northwest New Mexico. The Executive Director, Eliana Butler, is here with me this morning. Welcome back to KSJE. It's nice to see you.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. I mentioned that this is a special year for SAS, your 20th anniversary.
It is our 20th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Hard to believe.
Right. But a lot of work over those 20 years, too,
yes.
And a lot of education, which is an amazing feat. And then, of course, another anniversary, a little bit less, 10 years of SAS in the Gallup area, the McKinley County area.
That's right. We have an office in Gallup, and it has been 10 years. And so we'll talk about all the services that we both provide.
Very good. I'm glad that we can do that. And also about your big event coming up, too, in just a couple of weeks, which we'll say next month, but it's really sooner than it seems the next month.
It's around the corner.
Right.
April 6th.
Yes.
12th annual Sassy Tortoise and Hare Run.
Very cool. And this raises money for SAS and all the programs and services that SAS provides, right?
Right. All the services, we're a nonprofit, as we've talked a lot about over the years. So we're mostly grant funded. The grants are very specific in terms of the programs and the services we provide through them. So what fundraising does for us is provide extra support to the organization that for expenses that fall outside those regular grant requirements.
Got you. So talk to me a little bit about some of the many things that SAS does here in the area in both San Juan and McKinley counties and the things that you've been doing for the last 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a good time to go over kind of the history and why SAS started, and then we'll kind of build into that. In 2003, the state legislature, along with some advocacy through our Sexual Assault Coalition, which is our statewide coalition, recognized that sexual assault survivors were programs that serve sexual assault survivors really only existed in the I-25 corridor, you know, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Las Cruces. And they wanted to expand that and fund startups basically across the state so that survivors didn't have to travel or didn't get seen at all. And so here in San Juan County, there was a small program at San Juan Regional Medical Center. They collected sexual assault evidence kits. There was a doctor here who saw children, but if they weren't available, often families and kids were driving to Albuquerque to be seen. It was really just not a very good situation.
Right.
And often when survivors came to the hospital, if it wasn't an emergency where they needed to be seen right away, which often is the case, then they waited and waited to get services. So that, you know, that's just really not okay, and the community recognized that. So, right.
And this, pardon me for interrupting, but this is already somewhat concerning because of the, maybe it's underreported with sexual assault incidents and crimes and things along that line. So making it even harder to get treatment or to see someone 200 miles away probably was even worse at that time.
Absolutely. And survivors back then or before we existed, I've talked to folks who maybe are in therapy with us now who tried to get help or didn't know what happened to their sexual assault evidence kit at the time. And there's a lot of things going on that didn't, one, help survivors and also didn't hold the offenders accountable
right.
to the crime. So it was a couple nurses at the hospital really wanted to get a SANE program going. That was the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiners program that we still operate here in Farmington.
Right.
And so that was our first funded program and what I was hired to do January 4th-ish of 2004. I don't even remember right. the first day of work that year.
Right.
But was to get the SANE program solidified, the nurses who, some nurses had been trained and get the program going.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital was a huge, and they're supportive of you all, I know, and they're
right.
a really good community hospital that support programs across the area. But they have, since we started, supported us with our location, basically. Mm-hmm. And we've grown and moved over the years, but they provide monetary support now for our space and also helped with our medical director and just sort of those, we get our labs and our pharmacy scripts through there. And
right.
So, you know, they've really assisted over the years in helping sustain this program as we've grown.
Nice. A good partnership, it sounds like,
it's
to me,
really
between the two of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not having to do the whole program. They have you now and your staff that can take over that and been still helping in a certain way.
Exactly. And that was one of the big reasons they decided not to have the same program housed at the hospital. So we're considered community-based,
mm-hmm.
not hospital-based, because it takes a lot of time, takes docs and nurses away from the really emergency things that are happening at the ER. And so our clinic provides a very quiet, private space for survivors to receive the care they need in the time that they need to take to make all the decisions that they have when it comes to this.
And that is a service that you provide, and I think I'm correct in remembering this, isn't it 24 hours a day or resources 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
We have a 24-hour hotline.
Thank you.
That's answered by our administrators on call. Those are our full-time advocates.
Mm-hmm.
They take a 24-hour rotation, and then they work with the nurses, the survivor, the hospital, police, like whoever it is, to schedule the exam.
Got it. Because time is somewhat important in this.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. So there's an acute, what we call acute window, when we can do the sexual assault evidence kit collection. For anyone who's over 13, we have 5 days to do that kit. And anyone who's under 12 and under, we have 3 days to do that evidence collection. There are other things we can do outside of those time frames, but the evidence collection in particular, it's really crucial that it's done in that time frame.
Got it. Very good. And that is just one of the things that Sexual Assault Services has been doing in the area and expanding, I think, too, and offering other things, too. So continue the history, if
through.
You would. Yeah.
Well, along with SANE comes advocacy, obviously.
Right.
So we hired an advocate program coordinator just a couple months after I started, and we built a volunteer advocate program. And so those now we did a volunteer program for probably 15 or 16 years. A few years ago, we transitioned to all staff advocates. And so whenever the person was seen, there's a team response with the advocate and the SANE nurse, so that the advocate is there to provide emotional support, make sure all the resources that person or that family needs is met, and make sure that they really understand all their choices and can slow down the process if needed to make sure that, you know, the survivor has the time, takes the time to decide what's best for them.
Right.
So we have this team approach. During those first couple of years, I was working on getting our 501c3. And so between 2004 and 2006, we had a fiscal agent. It was Family Crisis Center. There was a lot of community support when the programs were getting developed and the funding was starting to come in, and we needed a place for it to land, right, as a nonprofit. So we worked on the 501c3 process, and we got that going and separated from FCC in 2006.
FCC, Family Crisis Center.
Family Crisis
Center. Not Federal Communications Commission, because we deal with that acronym too.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Yes. These acronyms in our world.
My ears popped up. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah.
That's right. Family Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still a partner with them. Obviously,
sure,
they're the domestic violence organization here. And so over time, we grew, we moved, we expanded staff, and we added a therapy department. Over maybe 12 or 13 years ago. And now we have a pretty robust therapy department with 5 therapists and some contract therapists. During the pandemic, our wait list skyrocketed to over 80 people on the waiting list. And so we just continually try to grow and add so that now folks don't have to wait as long. It's 1 to 2 months waiting period. But we also have built in crisis support during that time while someone's waiting to get into ongoing therapy. We can provide crisis support during that 1 to 2 months so that folks don't feel alone and they can get that immediate someone to talk to and just some stabilization during that time.
Right. And of course, then in the last 10 years, you expanded into McKinley County with these very similar services, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So initially that was funded through a grant through Indian Health Services out of Shiprock. And part of their goal was to not only expand rape crisis services in and around the Shiprock service area, which we do, also into the Gallup service area. And so we opened an office down there 10 years ago. Everything I'm talking about, we do there except for SANE. SANE up until, well, currently even, is done at Gallup Indian Medical Center and a community, Gallup Community Health Center.
Okay.
But in very...
Which are hospital-based.
Hospital. The one's a community clinic, one's a hospital.
I see.
But it's not very sustainable, and we've had a lot of community meetings this year, and it's now been decided that SAS is going to start a community-based SANE program in Gallup. So that's the next growth phase. Like, okay. I wasn't sure. We were pretty stable in offering the services we do, and it really makes a lot of sense that a program come in outside of a hospital setting. It's better for survivors, and we have experience with doing it.
Right.
So
right.
I am currently working on some grants to get that going.
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But again, needed in the Gallup area, and maybe can be a little bit more sustainable under your leadership and under the sexual assault services umbrella of services. And you kind of already doing this. So you kind of know how to put the pieces together.
Yeah. Put the pieces together, sustain it over time. And we actually think that just given what we know in terms of the advocacy we've been doing and the numbers coming out of the hospital, we think our numbers will look very similar, if not higher than here. So it's
in a smaller community.
In a smaller community, but also
by population, but still they have a lot of the influx of retail and things like that, like Farmington does.
Exactly.
And a reservation kind of border town type of situation as well.
Right.
So
yeah, people already travel a fairly long way to Gallup Indian Medical Center to be seen for medical care. And they talk about similarly as we do here in Farmington, that's the service center.
Right. And I wanted to go back and pick up a little bit on the advocacy that you talked about by having that advocate there with the survivor to be able to talk about the choices and you know, the things that are available, which don't always necessarily have to mean law enforcement, if I'm understanding correctly, right? Yes. It's not an automatic police report unless the survivor wants to do that. And that's really important.
It's extremely important, with the caveat that if it's child sexual abuse, then those do require a police report.
That's always, right. That's
always, right. Yeah. So we'll just put that out front first. But anyone who, if it's not considered child sexual abuse, the survivor has that choice whether to involve law enforcement or not. And that's really important. We see often that someone might come in for services and say, absolutely not, I don't want to file a police report. I just want it behind me. You know, I just want the medication, whatever that looks like for them. And after receiving the care that they get from the SANE nurse and the advocate, and all of their options are presented to them, with that support, they often feel empowered and ready to make that report.
Got it.
And that's crucial.
Right. But maybe not right away. And I guess that's important to give them that time to maybe reconsider and become, feel more empowered, as you mentioned, that, you know, I don't need to, you know, not pursue this, or these, my choices are many and I need to maybe follow through.
Right. And the other thing that's really important to know is we can do the evidence collection through the sexual assault evidence kit, even if the survivor decides not to file a police report. So that kit is held, depending on the jurisdiction, whether we hold it or the law enforcement jurisdiction holds it with, it's de-identified when we turn it over, for a year. So it gives that person time. You know, that year anniversary is a big deal. And year anniversaries are, for anything, are a big deal. So they hold them for that year and just a little past to see if that person changes their mind. So we don't lose anything. They don't lose any evidence that might have been collected during that time frame, because we can do it all up front.
Right. And I guess having that then available in case this abuser is involved in other cases is important as well, to have that available too if a case goes somewhere.
Right. So then once the person files the police report, those kits are sent to the crime lab, and the crime lab analyzes what was collected, and potentially there is DNA evidence, and then that's put to CODIS. Don't ask me what that stands for, but that's that's the database.
Is that like a clearinghouse?
Or, I know I'm going to, yeah, it's basically, it's the database where all DNA is stored in crime cases. And so if the person maybe doesn't know who the offender was, or if that person had prior cases, you know, that would come up.
Somebody could do a search, I guess, and maybe look for a match.
Right. That would be law enforcement's job. Yeah. So the crime lab puts it in a CODIS. There's, we call it a hit. Then, I mean, that's how cold cases are solved often.
Right. And we hear about that all the time. So that's important to note. And so, again, in the history of SAS, the 20 years and 10 years in McKinley County, these services, again, happen almost every day of the year and 24 hours a day with the hotline. And, I mean, these services are available to folks in these communities. And of course, even though you're here, it's still a long way to travel for some folks in your service area, because you're covering all of Northwest New Mexico and into the, I would say probably into some parts of Northeast Arizona.
We can, right. So we also provide services in Shiprock at Northern Navajo Medical Center. We have a dedicated SANE room there. So if a survivor is coming from Arizona, Southern Utah, even Southern Colorado, and land at IHS in Shiprock, they call us, and the survivor then has an option. We can come there. The nurse and the advocate will travel there to do the exam. Sometimes people want to come to Farmington, and so we just want to make sure folks have the options and the choices they need to so that we can serve them the best that, you know, they would like.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's important as well. Give us an idea, numbers wise, how many cases you see monthly, yearly. What would you, I mean, and you said during the pandemic that your numbers were pretty high, at least for counseling and things like that, I think, as I recall.
Right.
But how are things looking now a few years out from the pandemic?
Pretty similar. Okay. I think in all these years I've been coming to talk to you, we talk about our average number of SANE exams is between 115 to 130 a year. We pretty much have that average. Last year was a little low for us. I think we didn't quite hit 100 cases.
Okay.
We did have to refer some folks to other programs.
But that's like 10 a month, if my math is right, this early in the morning.
It is, yeah. So between 10 and 15 a month is our average.
Okay.
And we are looking for SANE nurses, as probably every other clinic. I know for sure SANE programs in the area and across the state. So if you're, any of your listeners are here in the nursing program, we do presentations up here with them.
Good, right.
Forensic nursing is a really interesting career path for nurses, and SANE in particular is a great way to entree into that. They're on-call positions, and they get to choose their schedule. Most of my nurses have other full-time jobs.
Okay.
So we're trying to match those schedules with our schedule to make sure that we're able to provide services every day.
Gotcha. Very good. Well, hopefully we can find you some students here and soon to be graduates at the San Juan College to help with that. But that's an issue, as you mentioned, probably in a lot of places across the country these days. Yeah. And so with that, you know, seeing 10, 15 SANE exams every month or so, and the other advocacy work that you do and talking to maybe nursing students here at the college. And I imagine, is there some other work that you do out in schools or with younger folks? And can we talk about teenagers and dating situations and all that is another important message, I guess, yes. Right? That young women know, and men, they're what to be concerned about or what to be watching for.
Exactly. So you're tying us right into our primary prevention program. So we do community outreach and education. Those tend to be more, this is who we are, this is how you access our services, and some basics. We call them our kind of our 101 presentations. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about primary prevention of sexual abuse and sexual assault, we need to be in front of the same group of people or same individuals over time in order to really affect change. And that's the goal, right? We would love to work ourselves out of a job one day. So preventing sexual abuse and sexual assault is everybody's responsibility. So we have, in the schools, we have three different programs. One is our Care for Kids program. That's for the littles. That's, you know, 4 to 6 and 7 year olds. And it's about boundaries and how we grow and the older you get, the less help you need from adults, that kind of thing.
Okay.
We're not talking to kids about sexual activity or anything like that.
Right.
But we are talking about asking someone for a hug or asking to borrow the toy, because it's teaching consent and it's teaching that the asking and then respecting when someone says, no, I don't want to share with you, or no, I don't feel like giving a hug today. And so all of those lessons come in real child-friendly way of, the curriculum is a 9-ish, I think, session where they have a book and they have a song and they, you know, have a worksheet that goes home to the parents to help parents start talking to their kids about right. these things at a really young age, because a lot of parents don't know how to do it.
True.
The right. other thing that's really important in that program, though, is they do talk about what our body parts are called, including our private parts, because if children don't know and if they have nicknames for their private parts, adults won't clue in if they're being abused.
Right.
So that's really crucial. And getting adults comfortable with these conversations is really what matters. Kids are open books, right? They'll learn anything the way we want to teach them. And so that all that is really important. So we're in Head Starts and some daycares. It's really tough to get into schools with this topic. But Aztec Schools has done an incredible job. They have adopted several different curriculums, and we're involved in the junior high and high school programs, but in teaching mm-hmm. child sexual abuse prevention from kindergarten up.
Okay.
And that's really the goal with right. school districts.
Good to know. Yeah. Very good. Just have a few minutes yep. remaining this morning, Eliana, and I wanted to ask you again about the event coming up. So let's end with that, because okay. this is a way for folks to maybe help you do all these things we've been talking about with this fundraiser of the Sassy Tortoise and Hare Run. I know there's a story of Tortoise and Hare, and I forget what it is exactly, but you can maybe remind me.
Now you're going to take me back to my childhood. But okay. I am the one that came up with the theme 12 years ago.
Right.
So SAS, Sexual Assault Services.
Yeah, got that.
And in our early years, I think what SASE came of, we were saying Sexual Assault Services Supporting You. And that's really okay. our goal, right?
Right.
But it's just morphed into SASE and the Tortoise and the Hare. It's the story of the Tortoise and the Hare racing, and the Hare's thinking he's going to win. But really, the tortoise wins because the hare does some things I think he wasn't supposed to. I forget
right.
the exact story.
Seemed very overconfident is what I get from that yeah. from that parable or story. Yeah, yeah. And the tortoise was slow and steady and ended up winning the race. And so right. so this is it can be a race. It also is a walk. You kind of have it open to everybody, basically,
it's
right?
Open to everyone. We do prizes for the top male and female winners in both the 10K and the 5K race.
Okay.
So top three in each race get pretty cool prizes. Brown's Shoe Downtown has been a sponsor for a lot of years, and they get gift certificates to
nice.
Them.
Nice. Very good.
We do a raffle, and we have sponsors. So some really great sponsors again this year is on our website and on the poster that you should see around town. But Marion Oil and Gas is a big one. San Juan County Commission
is
another one. KSG.
Glad to be there, you bet.
And KISS, they do our advertising in kind. Mm-hmm. We have Basin Health Companies, PESCO, Kaiser, Levitt, there's Garrison Graphics, Basin Surveying, there's a bunch.
Right. But names that we hear over and over, over again, because these companies support the community so many different ways. Right. So they deserve the kudos for this. The date will be Saturday, April 6th, which will be here, before we know it.
Less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. A week from this Saturday, I hate to tell you. But
thanks.
10 a.m.
And at Lock Street Eats, though. So this is a new, folks who have done this with us for all these years know we've moved it around. The last few years, it's been downtown.
Right.
This year, we partnered with Lock Street Eats, which is the food truck area right off downtown.
So right. Downtown, but like at Main and Lock, basically. Yeah. So maybe Main and Orchard, but you'll still be in the downtown area.
Exactly. The route will be almost the same, just starting and ending there. They have the food trucks. We're going to have some music. They have a kids' play area. So we're excited to partner with them because Cottonwood Clinics, they're the ones that own it, and they're really invested in the mental health of this community, and so we think it's a neat partnership.
Right. So it's a 5K or a 10K race, or for those of us who aren't racers, we could do the 1 mile
stroller roll.
You don't have to have a stroller. Yeah. I may need one.
you don't need to be pushed, but anyone can sign up for any one of those races or walks.
Right.
And the most common is the 5K walk, but I am seeing this year a lot of 10Kers sign up. So I think it's getting fairly popular.
I bet it would be. Well, I think everyone wants to get out, especially after this weekend, to get out and maybe do something. And so we're sure it'll be good weather.
I am positive.
On the 6th of April at 10 at 10 a.m. But you can go to a website, runningguru.com, to register. Search for Sassy, and I bet you'll find it right away.
You'll find it there. You can go to our Facebook page and go to the event page, which will take you straight to the registration on Running Guru also. It's pretty easy to find. If you can't, call the office. It's 325-2805. And one of us will guide you to the website as well.
Right. Very good. And t-shirts?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Yes. Okay, we're doing t-shirts. This year, the theme is purple, so it's going to be some sort of purpley color shirt.
Okay.
I have folks who have literally done this walk every year, and they have every shirt there is, and so I'm trying to diversify these colors.
It's a source of pride for these folks, I'm sure, right?
It is,
And I would imagine the earlier you register, the better chances of you getting a t-shirt and not running out of the sizes. And so, hint, hint, listeners and viewers, runningguru.com, it would be how you would go and do that and get signed up. And you can, I guess, form a team or run with your friends or walk with your friends. Or
they can form a team. I don't have the team part set up, but absolutely, we have, like, Basin Coordinated sends a bunch of their folks, and they have the Basin team. People come kind of dressed to match each other, and that kind of thing. Yeah.
So, very good. And again, all the money raised will help the Sexual Assault Services in Northwest New Mexico continue their mission, which they've been doing for now 20 years in the community. This big anniversary year, 10 years in the Gallup area, and still expanding even more services providing in the Gallup area, it sounds like, next year when we talk.
Absolutely. And I'll just really quick, you still have it up, is our Teal Ribbon campaign.
Yes, that's right.
We did that last year, starting last year. Gallup's been doing it for a few years. So if anyone listening is interested in having a teal ribbon painted on their business window or where you work, if you know you want to talk to your business owners about that, we're happy to have our painter come do that. It's a way in April, which is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, to show support for survivors. And we're hoping to paint the town teal.
There you go. Very true. We can barely see the one you're wearing on your sweater this morning, but there it is. Yes. But that's what you can get on your window. And we're glad that ours is still up and looking really good. So it's a great way to promote this year round, not just the month of April, which is an important thing to remember too.
Absolutely. You know, some of the businesses still have them up. And I thought, how apropos, because it's, April might be our awareness month, but it's certainly not an issue that goes away.
Right. Very true. Eliana, it's always great to visit with you and learn more about all the work that SAS does in our communities, plural, and continue the good work. And good luck with the Sassy Tortoise and Hare Run on April 6th.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You're very welcome. It's Eliana Butler, my guest this morning from Sexual Assault Services of Northwest New Mexico here on KSJE.
No signs of crypto winter in this tropical archipelago. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino.
Marketplace Tech is supported by Progressive Insurance, offering small business owners protection for what they've worked hard to build with over 30 customizable coverages. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. And by Baird. Employee-owned and independent, Baird offers global financial advice focused solely on clients' needs. More information at baireddifference.com.
Crypto is once again big in the Philippines. It first took off during COVID lockdowns in 2021 with a now-defunct video game called Axie Infinity. It allowed players to earn money, often more than the minimum wage, through non-fungible tokens, or NFTs. Of course, the crypto winter soon followed with the implosion of FTX in 2022. But now, crypto is back in a big way in the island nation. Reporter Eli Tan recently visited and wrote about the scene for the New York Times.
I went to, you know, internet cafes that had popped up around Manila where people, it was packed every night with people coming in to play these games as their full-time income. You know, I visited farms where real-life farmers were on their phones harvesting virtual crops to earn money that they were using to expand their farms. I talked to people who were, you know, they're OFW, so they're overseas Filipino workers, and they were basically making enough money through crypto to return home to the Philippines to their families, and they call themselves overseas metaverse workers now. So yeah, it was kind of a crazy thing to witness.
What are the factors that have made crypto so popular in the Philippines?
Well, if you look at the demographics of the Philippines, this is a country where